Hello, friends. Welcome to this month's episode of Tim's Travails, where our favorite attorney, Timothy Trainer, who is also an amazing author, who's written seven books, including the ones behind him, The China Connection and The China Factor, are profiled and featured in all of his work. So today he is interviewing school safety expert Luis Aponte. And this is just amazing. I'm so excited to share this story with you all because it's critical. It's, as we were just saying before we jumped on this Zoom call, it's tragic that it's here and it's alive. And but Luis is doing an amazing job to share the real story behind school safety and how to prevent the next school shooting. Let me just tell you quickly about our guest. Some people talk about school safety, he says, but he actually studies it. A Northern Virginia librarian, Air Force vet, and author, Luis has spent 7 years digging into 1,204 school shooting cases. Is that still accurate?
That is still accurate. Yes, unfortunately, that number is still climbing. But for that 30-year period, that is about as accurate as I can get.
Wow, the more than 1,200 school shootings. That's breathtaking. You have reached your research includes a 2022 publication in the peer-reviewed Education Journal, and gives schools and lawmakers the data they need to act. Born in Savannah, Georgia, and trained as a librarian at the University of Southern Florida, Luis brings heart and expertise to his work. And when he's not writing, he's acting in films, also impressive. Please talk about that. Solving fictional crimes in library murder mystery plays, or exploring Virginia's parks with his wife, Eileen. His message is clear. Protecting kids is not political, it's essential. And the good news is the solutions are in reach. So I'm going to throw it over to Tim, and I'm so excited to hear your conversation today.
Thank you, Hope, and welcome, Luis. Thank you for agreeing to be on today. One of
Thank you,
the
Hope and
things
Tim, for having me. I greatly appreciate being here.
there's so many different ways for me to start with a question, but I think I'm going to go to the one that maybe for me, anyways, more interesting to get us started because we're going to primarily focus on school shootings. But before we dive into that, now you're a veteran.
Yes.
And you were in the Air Force, and just like anybody that goes through basic training, how much were you exposed to being trained on weapons during basic training?
That's a great question. In basic training, the only firearm that we were trained on was the M16, which is a fully automatic rifle. I did earn my marksmanship ribbon on that, which just basically means I hit the bullseye a few times. It was the first time I ever shot a rifle, and I was pretty lucky, I think. I just had a really good trainer. But after that, I really didn't need it because my initial job focused on being a Vietnamese linguist, and then later on, I transferred into electronics, where I worked at nuclear missile sites in the middle of nowhere, United States. I can't give any more details other than that. But yeah, it was a great growing experience. I was a young man. I was 18 when I first went in, and I used the GI Bill to go to college.
A lot of parallels there between the two of us, even though we might be a couple decades apart, but a lot of similarity. But so let me ask you this question then, as a follow-up to that, having experienced the feel of an M16 when you're firing that, did that at all have anything to do with the way it sensitized you to this particular subject of school shootings?
I don't believe so, but I did use that experience to illustrate that I understand that there is a purpose in place for guns in our country to not only for military purposes, for law enforcement purposes, but I think most gun owners that I know, including my brother, who is not the same political affiliation as I am, they feel that securing firearms and being responsible with them is a responsibility to being a gun owner.
And so I'm going to guess, like me, while you were in the Air Force, basically what you're saying is the only time you really had a weapon with you would be during times in basic training when you were going to the firing range, things like that. And then the rest of the time when you were getting your training after basic training and then your actual job in the Air Force, you really wouldn't have had a weapon accessible to you, right?
That's correct. In any of the barracks I ever lived in, nobody kept their firearms in the barracks, whether it was in Monterey, California, Oh gosh, Biloxi, Mississippi, Cheyenne, Wyoming. Not I don't know a single person that kept their firearms in on base. Oh, sorry, in their rooms. They were free to purchase them as they after. Matter of fact, I remember after basic training, a couple of my colleagues said, hey, "I'm gonna get me an M16," and it's only $400 back then. And maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't know, but I never saw it, visually saw it. They had kept it locked away. I understand you come from a military family as well, correct? A lot of the things that happen in the civilian world just don't happen on a military base, including
That's
school
true.
shootings, which shocked me. I mean, my father was in the army for 20 years, and I asked him, I said, you know, I don't remember ever hearing a story of in all the bases that we lived at, there was never a school shooting. He's like, do you recall any? He's like, no, I've never heard of a school shooting. So in my, I had like a short podcast related to my book, and I interviewed a guy who worked for the Department of Defense schools. And I asked him, I was like, you know, are you aware of any school shootings that happen on a military base? He's like, no. I was like, you know, what are you guys doing differently? And he was reluctant to tell me the security measures that they use to prevent such an occurrence. But he just said that they have a set of policies in place to help prevent that possibility, which I think was remarkable because I mean a lot of things that you happen in the civilian world, like I said before, I never experienced gangs, never experienced drugs, certainly not any gun violence, nobody bringing weapons into school because there was a more accountability. If your kid is messing up in school, the parent needs to take care of it, and the parent doesn't take care of it, it's referred to their sergeant, you know, their superior, and you don't want them involved.
No, I, you know, saying all those things really, I went to schools on military installations at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, Fort Knox, Fort Ord.
Oh, wow.
And I agree that I have to say, you know, they're obviously 60s into just the very early 70s. Yes, a couple guys might agree to get together after school for a fight, but it was not something where you saw a weapon of any kind, even a knife you wouldn't see. And you
Exactly.
say,
Exactly.
when you're on a in a school on a military post or base, they know where your father works. And they know how to find him if you're a troublemaker.
Oh yeah.
And
Oh yeah.
crap tends to roll downhill, and guess what? You're at the bottom. And there are ways of discipline and so on that just seem to exist in those environments. But I agree.
Yes, indeed.
The whole issue of school shootings is just not something I ever heard about growing up and while I was in school.
Right.
So then let me do another question I guess I have is, have you personally ever been victim of or around where you saw that, you know, school a gun at school?
Unfortunately, yes. I actually had to leave in the middle of my junior year because I stood up to a bully in my oceanography class. He knew that I wasn't part of any gang, not part of any clique. It was the second time I'd ever been in civilian school. This just happened to be Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, the same location that happened where the mass shooting happened in 2018, which was remarkable. Which is, I think, that's definitely what motivated me to make a difference. You know, to start doing this research. Just because it happened to me. But what happened was he drew this really nasty picture of a woman, and he crumpled up in a piece of paper and threw it on my desk. And I opened it up and said, "This is your mother." I'm like, "Really? Okay." So I crumpled it up and I threw it in his face. And he was trying to impress his friends. I didn't know he was in a gang until the next day. he said, "You want to fight?" I was like, "Sure. Where do you want to meet?" And he's like, "After school." And he never showed up, but I had to take the bus. I was like, "I'm not going to wait around for this idiot." So I just went home. And so the next day, this green of mine comes running the courtyard. You know, "David, David, you gotta go." My middle name is David, by the way. When I grew up as a kid, my name is Luis. A lot of kids used to make fun of it because it sounded like a girl's name, so I went by my middle name, which is David. So he says, "David, David, you have to get out of school." I'm like, "Why?" He's like, "This guy's looking for you and he has a gun." I'm like, "Bye." I'm not gonna try to be macho or heroic or no. I literally walked home. It took 45 minutes to walk home. I was like, "I'm not getting shot for anybody." And I told my mother, I was like, "Listen, I'm gonna go back to Hawaii because that's where my father was stationed. I'm gonna go live with my dad." She freaked out, talked to the principal, and I ended up getting home study, which is funny because you look back at it and just sort of like, why didn't you just call the cops? You know, why didn't you? You know, it's like, hey, this guy brought a gun to school, and that sounds logical in hindsight, but I was a teenager and I was afraid. And let's say he does get arrested, now all his gang member friends are going to be looking for me afterwards. You know, and I just didn't want all that drama. So yeah, I just finished high school a year early, and then as soon as I could join the Air Force, I did.
So is that the impetus then for this later research?
I think that was definitely the tipping point or the spark that ignited. It's like I have to do something. I mean, there's so many. I mean, you turn on the news any day of the week. There's always some kind of tragedy going on. But this felt more personal. This felt like something that I could do because one thing I'm really good at as a librarian is researching. I have access to databases that most people are not aware of, and I also paid for some additional databases just because back in the 90s there was no internet. Everything was news. I mean, yeah, they eventually had Yahoo and basic social media, but the news wasn't widely available back then. So you had to digitize. The 90s is the earliest I could find that had digitized newspapers, and so I used paid databases to make that happen.
So what were those initial steps? Was there something specific you were looking for when you first started, or was it just gathering just a lot of data and then starting to sift through that to figure out what you want to focus on within
Well,
the
one
data
thing I
that
noticed,
you
that's a good question, because one thing that I noticed that every time, especially a mass shooting, because the little shootings where only one or two people get shot doesn't get a whole lot of national attention. But whenever it's like five or more, suddenly it becomes national news. And I noticed that there seemed to be a pattern in terms of, especially politically, what one party accuses, puts the blame on and what the other party blames. And I was like, how much of this is true? And a lot of people just have these assumptions like, oh, it's mental health, or it's a certain type of gun, or it's because of video games, it's because of rap music, violence in movies. And it's like, I need to find out how much of this is true. And I would love to find patterns. So I try to identify as many patterns as I can find in available news reports. And I wanted to focus on all the assumptions that people have. Is it a high capacity magazine? Were they doing drugs? Were they in a gang? Do they have a criminal background? That kind of thing. Were they from another country? That kind of thing. Because these are conspiracy theories you hear all the time. I was like, well, how much of that is true? Because one thing I know as a communication student, my undergraduate degree was communications, film, and video. Before I became a librarian, I worked in film and television production for about 7 years in California and in Florida. And one of the things that they tell you is that what is the saying goes? Good news is bad news. And bad news is good news, and no news is bad news, that kind of thing. And so when something becomes national news, it's because it's so unusual, it's so rare. So things like, mental illness or somebody who might be transgender, that is so incredibly rare, but people just assume because of the news, it must happen all the time. And so I wanted to dispel those types of assumptions.
So if you had to pick one or two stereotypes that are really way off, what are they?
Violent video games and music, for one. Mental illness is another one, and bullying, surprisingly, is not the greater cause of school shootings. And bullying is a big one. Mental illness. Then, a matter of fact, I went to a training for work. This is a county government system, and it was de-escalation in an active shooter situation. And the police officer was saying, he literally prefaced it by saying, I don't have any facts on this or any data on this, but I believe that it's between 80 and 90% of all active shooters have met some kind of mental illness. And I'm just like, I'm squirming in my seat. I'm like, are you really just saying that right now? I was like, because data proves that people that have mental illness are more likely to be victimized by violence than to actually commit violence. And I felt that that was a very irresponsible thing for him to say. And I didn't want to embarrass him in front of the class. When the class was over, I approached him. I was like, let me ask you, where did you get that information from? I'm very curious because I wrote this book and I've been studying school gun violence for 7 years, over 1,200 of them. Where did you determine, that mental illness is the cause of these active shooter events? He's like, well, think about it. Who in their right mind would actually commit gun violence? I'm like, are you kidding me right now? I was like, you live in Virginia, be on the highway any day of the week and see how violent and aggressive people are. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're mentally ill. They just have a hard time controlling their emotions, and so I just wanted to, put that perspective in place and let them know. I felt like that was really irresponsible because now if somebody who has some kind of mental illness but is high functioning and wants to get a job, in the back of that person's mind who works for the government, it's like, oh, this person has a mental illness. Are they going to commit violence one day because, the cop said 80-90% of all shooters are, have a mental illness. That just completely, put like a target on these kind of people and say, make them not hireable, basically.
Well, I think that how many times do we hear a news report where somebody in a home or wherever gets shot by the police, and later on we find out that this person has some kind of illness, mental health
Right.
issue. So in that particular case, they may have been doing something, but all of a sudden they've become the victim because the police didn't know, so they got their weapons out and
Right.
the person gets shot, right?
Right. That's a very good point. I mean, I have a nephew who's autistic, and too much stimulation just kind of like makes him really nervous. He's not a bad kid. He's not necessarily violent, but he just doesn't know how to respond properly. I mean, I remember when he was really little, and I think I was tickling him or something, and I overstimulated him, and he just headbutted me in the nose. I can't blame him. It's not his fault. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to commit some kind of school gun violence. Right now, he's in college. He has a job. His father has lots of guns, and he has them locked away in a safe. And he's a former Marine, and he was in infantry. He fought in Afghanistan and Iraq. He's a responsible gun owner, and he's never had to worry whether or not his kids were going to steal his guns and go commit a mass shooting.
Yes. And so what about well, you said that your research kind of, it basically says to us, okay, it's not about video game violence. That's not what drives people. So what generally is the thing that you find to be the big motivation for someone to go out and do these crazy things, like, shooting people up at a school?
Very good question. I found out based on all the reports, not just newspapers, but police reports, court documents, nonprofit organizations that dedicate themselves to studying gun violence. Most of it is fights, feuds, arguments, and disputes. That's like basically, somebody looked at them the wrong way, or somebody's a member of another gang, or somebody's a member of another a rival school, a football school. Somebody stole their girlfriend, or there's some kind of gambling debt that they're pissed off about, and they don't want to lose face. Usually, it's just because they're just so angry, and nobody's taught them. It's like, that's not an appropriate way to respond to anger. Somebody pushed you, somebody bullied you, somebody said something nasty about you. The first thought in your mind should be, I'm going to get a gun. I mean, as adults, how many times have people insulted us or said something wrong or cut us off on the highway, or maybe you had a bad breakup, but it doesn't necessarily mean your first thought should be, what, I'm gonna equalize this situation and go get me a firearm, and then you'll see how powerful I am.
So does that, I would say that based on what you just said, this is where the emotional intelligence issue pops up. And maybe you can spend a moment talking about that or explaining what you mean by that.
So I think there would be two things: emotional intelligence and emotional mastery, and they're just a slight difference. Emotional intelligence, if you ever, oh gosh, there's a book out called Emotional Intelligence 2.0, New York Times bestseller, really good book. It's basically having the ability to identify emotions that you're feeling in that moment. Without reacting right away. Maybe you are sad and everything, but it doesn't necessarily mean that this is who you are and everything. And just identify, like, okay, I can look at this objectively. This is how I'm feeling. This is gonna pass. Let me go for a walk. Let me go to the gym. Let me call up a friend. Not let me start putting holes in walls and let me start beating my spouse. That kind of thing. That's what emotional intelligence is. Emotional mastery is not allowing those emotions to dictate what action you're going to take next.
Well,
So
okay. So that is something that I guess there's no class in school where they deal with that kind of an issue. At least not that I'm aware of. Maybe
I mean,
you
aside
do.
from maybe on as a side note with like coaching when it comes to sports, because as you know, I mean, I don't know if you ever played any sports in high school, especially when it comes to football, a lot of aggression and competition. But then, a good coach is gonna say, you need to calm down. And he's like, yeah, we lost, totally fine. We're just gonna train harder next time. Don't go and do something illegal or something that's going to get you kicked out of the game just because somebody was better than you or somebody's talked trash to you. One of the things when I gosh, when I lived in Hawaii, I played a lot of street basketball with some friends, and there was a lot of trash talking. You ever watch that movie, White Men Can't Jump?
I haven't seen the movie, but
Okay.
I can pretty much guess based on the title what goes on in that one.
Right. So it's street basketball, a lot of trash talking, a lot of cursing. I forgot how much cursing there's in there. But that's how it is. But emotional intelligence, it's like that's just part of the banter. That's part of the game. It's never acceptable to take it to a violent, situation. One of the things I learned growing up as a kid in martial arts, my whole family competed, practiced martial arts together. We competed in local tournaments. Any good master I've ever had, they always say it's always better to walk away from a fight than to engage in one. You only use that power that you have, judiciously when you have no other option or when somebody else's life is in danger. If anything, call the cops, run away, do whatever you have to do to be able to walk away from the situation. And that's what emotional mastery is.
You just raised something or mentioned something. It makes me think about this, and maybe this is not something that you looked at, but I'm just curious now.
Sure.
Those of us who engaged in sports, in junior high and high school, whether it's football, it doesn't matter what the sport really
Right,
is.
right.
But there are multiple things as part of that, which is one, you do have a coach. Some of those coaches, depending on the sport, and they might use some strong language.
Oh,
And
yeah.
you just get used to those kinds of things. And if certainly when it's a physical sport like football, I mean, you're pounding into each other at practice every single day.
Oh,
The
yeah.
question is, are kids that are more involved in sports? I mean, do we look at the background of the kids that are doing the school shootings and say, maybe it's the lack of participation in some of those kinds of events where they aren't really. They don't have a coach or somebody trying to take that all that energy and focus them a certain way. And there's none of that in some of the kids if they're not participating in sports, right?
Right.
So I
No,
wonder if you look
that's
at
a
that.
fair argument, I think.
Oh, I'm just throwing that out as just something I thought of as you were talking.
No, that's interesting perspective. I mean, as an adult right now, I don't really play any sports. Whatever my
Yeah.
sport of choice is just going to the gym just so I can stay active and mobile.
Yeah.
but yes, I think there is an argument to say that if you don't have an outlet such as sports, that can be a means to fester all that anger and all that frustration, especially if you don't have an outlet to release it.
Yeah.
Alternatively, there's lots of students that just don't they don't care about sports.
No, that's
They will
true
never
too.
ever care about sports, but they need to have some kind of outlet, whether it's art, whether it's writing, whether it's filmmaking, whether it's going out for just a jog, a walk in the forest. That's one of the reasons why I moved from Florida to Virginia. You guys have the most beautiful parks out here, the most beautiful forests, and you have seasons. I always find anytime I go for a walk, some people call it forest bathing. I just feel so much more at ease, just because just to get the fresh air. And there's something there's I remember there was some kind of study that I read about the physiological and psychological effects of walking around and just looking at a bunch of green. Just having plants around the house actually just helps calmness.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's something about the green that's just tied to our genetic makeup that just makes us feel a little bit more calm. So naturally, a forest brings lots of calm,
There you
hopefully.
go. Well, I'm going to go back to something that you said when we had our telephone conversation a few weeks ago. And you said that
Sure.
different government agencies describe school shootings different ways. Does that contribute to the way it's reported?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because a lot of the news reports that I read, they would cite different agencies in terms of what results they came up with. So the FBI has a certain report. Congress has a certain report, the Office of Government Accountability, the Department of Education, but they all have a completely different definition of what a school shooting is. And they're not, I feel it's completely underrepresented because one will focus on an active shooter versus the other one. Oh, I'm just trying to, off the top of my head, let me see if I can actually.
Because I would guess that because there are different ways of reporting it, it can skew numbers one way or the other.
Yes, absolutely. Here we go.
Yeah.
So the FBI, for example, let me see. They will focus on Active shooter events, which, let me see, an individual actively engaged in killing or attempting to kill people in a populated area, versus the U.S. Secret Service and the Department of Education. They did a combined report together, and they focused only on targeted school violence versus active school violence. And their definition is as any incident of violence where a known or knowable attacker selects a particular target prior to their violent attack. So, like, for in one example, you might have somebody say, "You know what? I'm just going to shoot people indiscriminately." What happened in Parkland? That was an active shooter situation. He didn't care who was shooting. Versus somebody who's like, "You know what? There is a group of jocks that have been messing with me. I'm going to shoot up the entire football team." So that's less more of a like a targeted a shooting versus the government accountability. What did they call it? Let me see. They define a school shooting that any time a gun is fired on school grounds, on a bus, during a school event, during school hours, or right before or after school. So, like, there's a completely three different definitions that they have, and of course they're going to have different results. And that's what I when I published my article in the peer-reviewed education journal, I pointed that out, and I just felt that it was really irresponsible to for the public who don't, they're not experts, they're not researchers. You know, they're just trusting that our government agencies are doing their due diligence. They're trusting that reporters are doing their diligence, and they are to the best of their ability, but they have deadlines. You know, they have to meet the 6 o'clock, you know, news. You know, how are you going to study 30 years of gun violence and death? I think the closest one would be, I think it's like CNN, the Wall Street Journal, where I think they documented about 350 school shootings in the past 20 or so years, and which is good. It's a good start, but it's just the name of the school, how many were killed, and location. That they don't really give a whole lot of detail beyond that. They might every once in a while list what type of gun was used, but that was it. It doesn't tell you about the motivation. It doesn't tell you about what part of the school that it happened. One thing that might surprise you is that most school shootings happen outdoors. Great. So now you have all these people that are spending millions of dollars on hardening schools, but what are you going to do about all the shootings that are happening in the parking lot? You know?
Parking lots, playgrounds, and so on, right? I mean,
Right, right.
there's a lot of green space, shall we say, around a lot of schools.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And not all of them are completely fenced off. You know, they have multiple entry points. So great, you might have a metal detector at the entrance, but what are you going to do about the gym door or the cafeteria door where their buddy's like, "Hey, can you let me in?" He just pushes open the door and lets him in. Yeah, and that happens more often than you think.
Well, I would think it could. I think we also, well, before I go on to that, the question that just popped into my mind, one of the things
Sure.
that you have mentioned was, and I don't know what this is, Alyssa's Law. What is that?
Yes. Okay. Great question. Alyssa's Law is a piece of legislation that was started by Lori Alhadeff. She started a nonprofit organization called Make Our School Safe, and she lost her 14-year-old daughter in the Parkland shooting. Her name was Alyssa. Hence the name Alyssa's Law, and basically what it is, it's a panic button. So what happened in Parkland was that when the shooting happened, there was multiple reasons why they weren't able to quickly identify where it was coming from. One, I believe there was a delay in the camera feeds, so they weren't getting live footage. And it's a large campus. They had about 3,500 students at that time. So the one resource officer that was on campus couldn't identify where it was, at least according to his testimony. And so I'm sure there was a lot of kids calling 911, and they weren't able to, you know, necessarily identify where the shooting was come from. They were probably hiding underneath a desk somewhere with the lights closed and the door, you know, the door closed. So what it does, the panic button will alert law enforcement right away, and it will tell them exactly where the emergency is happening. So that way it saves minutes, it saves times, because literally every second counts. Every second, that passes, people die. What happened in Parkland, 17 people were killed, 17 people were injured in 6.5 minutes. The guy wasn't arrested until long after he was off campus, like 45 minutes after the violence was over, because he just dropped his gun and just walked out with all the students with his hands up and went to the local restaurant. He went to like a Subway or something and ordered a sandwich, and that's where they found him. And the same situation happened in Uvalde. They hesitated to go in for whatever reason. I have no idea. If it was the fact that they couldn't locate where it was or where the shooter was, that's one thing. But if you're hesitating because the guy has an AR-15, Well, what you have is, I mean, this is what frustrates me about what happened in Florida, where they're just like, yeah, the teacher should have guns. Okay, the law enforcement had guns. They had body armor. They had training, and they still didn't go in. But you're expecting these teachers who spend more life, more time with the children than their own parents to shoot another child? Really? Is that what you're expecting? And just I just felt it was unreasonable. But what's great about Alyssa's Law is that it's a panic button either under the desk, on a lanyard, or on a phone app that they can press, and it immediately tells them that where the location is happening in terms of the shooting itself. And it's passed in at least 10 states, in both Democratic and Republican states. She is my role model. She is a superhero. She's fearless. I really have a lot of respect for her. Matter of fact, 50% of all the profits from my book will be going to her organization, Make Our School Safe, and another one called Stand for the Silent. Stand for the Silent is run by a gentleman named Kirk Smalley, and is to help pre prevent teen suicide.
So I given what we you've just mentioned, I think I want to go back and just so it's worth hearing again, because we obviously, because of the number of school shootings, yes, there's this clamor for arming teachers. And as you just pointed out, why do we think that they can do a better job if we've got body armored, armed police hesitating to go in, and you're expecting basically someone who's that the teacher without any of this, with less training, to do what the police are hesitant to do themselves.
I have a perfect parallel, and forgive me because my undergraduate degree is I have a film background. But you ever watch that movie 300
I don't think I
with
have.
Gerard Butler? Okay, so there's a scene. It's based on a history of Greece where the 300 Spartans stood up against, I don't know, thousands and thousands of Persians. And so other Greeks came that were not Spartans to help, fight the Spartans. And there was tons of them, and they're pissed off basically because the Spartans only have 300 people, and the other Athenians, they're like, I thought you were serious about this war, serious about fighting. As like, we brought more soldiers than you did. And so he's asking the Greeks, what do you do for a living? He's like, I'm a baker. And the other guy says, what do you do? He's like, I'm a potter. He's like, I'm a teacher. And then he yells out to the rest of the Spartans. He's like, Spartans, what is your profession? And they're like, that is their job. That is their main function. Same thing with law enforcement. Their main function is to protect and to serve. And I understand they don't want to lose their life. They have families. They have regular lives. My stepfather was a cop. He was a detective in Fort Lauderdale Police Department. My brother was a cop. My best friend was a cop. I understand that's it's a dangerous profession, but you are more trained, more armed, more ready to go than any teacher whose main function is to serve kids.
And we know that if a teacher hesitates, if they're confronted with somebody that's got a weapon, I mean, that hesitation will probably cost them their lives, right?
Right, absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, honestly, let's say there was a teacher that was armed, and let's say that teacher happened to be a veteran, so they're very well versed with firing a firearm. Okay, so they probably have a handgun. They don't have something that's comparable to an AR-15. And granted, it's not a fully automatic weapon. I know they tried to ban bump stocks, which I thought was funny that they went through the effort of banning bump stocks. Bump stocks had never ever been used in a school shooting. Not one, not one. In 1,204 school shootings, bump stocks had never been used. So I don't know what the point of doing that after the Parkland shooting. I understand that is a solution, a potential solution to allow teachers to be armed. I think it's going to cause more trouble than anything else. And some of my results in the 1,204 school shootings, there was a teacher who accidentally left her gun in the school bathroom, and another student found it. There's that, because humans are just human. They make mistakes. And he's like, you know what? This is kind of heavy on my pants. Let me just put it on the toilet really quick while I do my thing. And then you walk away. I've done that with my cell phone. I can only imagine how many people might do that with a gun in a school,
But yeah, so well, clearly the panic button is one potential option as far as helping. What about other technologies or other ideas of how to address the problem?
In terms of technologies, I think what parents can do, there are apps that are out there, and I don't recommend any particular one because I don't want to favor one over the other. Do your own due diligence in terms of reviews. But there are apps that are out there, and I think most phone companies offer this option where you can monitor your child's activity. You know, a lot of people may or may not say, "Oh, well, you know, what about a child's privacy?" I was like, I come from a Caribbean family. My family's from Puerto Rico. You don't have privacy until you pay for your own bills and get, you know, pay for your own rent. The parent's job is to teach you how you should be a functional, you know, respectful adult until you turn 18. And after that, you know, you did the best you could, you know?
Well, especially
So
if you've
yes,
left
you
home,
could.
yes.
Yeah, and there was another guy that I interviewed on my podcast. He said, you know, a child really doesn't need a cell phone, but if you absolutely feel just for emergency purposes and for, you know, to keep a social life, you know, get them a flip phone until they're like 16 or 17, because you know when they connect on social media, I mean, people are so much more cruel social media than when I was a kid, you know, because social media, you know, wasn't a thing. You know, like if anybody were to speak to you or me in person, you know, when we were kids, the way people talk to each other on social media, they'd have their lights knocked out. You know,
There'd be certainly a
if
lot more fights, yes.
oh yeah, you know, so you learn through trial and error, you know, what's acceptable, discussion towards somebody else or criticism.
Well, the socialization took place face to face.
Right, exactly, you know.
No, and that's a big difference.
So I think that's one technology that would be helpful. I'm trying to think of another one would be helpful. Another one I think would be to monitor their online activity, like say on a laptop, for example, because in a lot of school shootings, not most of them, there was a lot of were a lot of warning signs where they might be on some kind of you know, forum, some obscure forum where people are kind of accepted for their extreme views and everything's like, oh, I hate my school, I hate my principal, I'm gonna go shoot him. And nobody would report you to you know, and granted they do that on regular social media as well, but a lot of people, one, they may not know who the person is or where to locate them. But in most situations, their friends and you know, their peers, they don't believe them. They think they're just trying to be funny, you know, and so they don't still won't say anything. And that's the big problem. Teaching kids to speak up, you know, say, you know what? He may have been joking, but you know, he did say that he was gonna bring a gun to school. And a lot of times they're just trying to show off to show how tough they are, how cool they are. There's so many situations where the student just brought their father's gun, and the godfather doesn't even know the gun is gone. And he's not trying to shoot anybody. He's like, hey, look how cool this is. And then it accidentally discharges and it shoots two or three kids, and it ricochets off the walls and injures someone else. You know, that happens a lot. But that's not included in the official government reports because that's not a school shooting. But if I was a parent and I heard about my child's classmate brought a gun to school, I want to know. I don't care that it wasn't a mass shooting. I want to know that a kid's bringing a gun to school, you know, because I want it to be addressed quickly. Otherwise, I'm getting a kid out of that school. But that's just me.
So now that you've got this research in a book, and I don't know if we haven't shown a cover of the book, but it's the title A Safe Place.
Right.
What have been your interactions, whether it be, you know, school boards, state officials, Virginia, or anywhere else for that matter? I mean, with what you found in the information that you've collected and put out there.
Well, right now, the main folks, gosh, the only reason why I went to the recent, oh gosh, the author event at the City of Fairfax Library is that it was only going to happen once. I was like, you know what? I need to jump in there. I didn't even have the physical book with me. Pre-orders were available at the time. So there was that. And the people that I interacted with, hence the reason why, how I got to meet you, they're very receptive. I really appreciated that. I was really nervous because when I started researching this in the beginning, I kind of started promoting it like years in advance. On like Facebook, and I was getting some hate mail by people that are like, oh, you're just a libtard, and you know, you're just trying to take away my guns. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like, you haven't read the book. It's not published. You can't possibly know what I'm going to talk about. But yet, like, they're just completely trashing me. I'm like, wow, okay. let me start putting some of the material out there, and just to calm everybody's nerves, this is not a political book. This has to do with everybody, regardless if you're a Republican, Democrat, completely indifferent, apathetic, whatever.
Yeah.
If you care about kids, if you have kids that are in school, this might be appropriate for you because it doesn't require an act of Congress. It doesn't require taking away anybody's Second Amendment rights. This is something that can be done on a community level, not just with parents, but it could be done in sports. It could be done in churches, especially in churches. I mean, I don't know what your religious background. I'm currently not a religious person, but I was raised as a Protestant. Every Sunday, we'd go to Sunday school. And they would talk about, turning the other cheek. That's one of the lessons that Christ gives. And I think that was a lesson in emotional intelligence. Somebody hits you, somebody strikes you, somebody offends you. You know what? Just turn away. Give the other cheek, so to speak. In practicality, somebody punches me on one
Yeah.
cheek. I'm just like, hey, punch this side too. No, you know what? I'm good. I'm just gonna walk away. I'm not gonna give you the chance to punch me again. Unless, of course, I feel my life is threatened. Then that's when the martial arts come
Yeah.
in.
So at this particular point, I mean, it sounds to me like have you reached out to people and let's say local government, state government, whatever, with the book, the data?
Yes, I've sent my book to a few my local congressmen. I've sent it to the CEOs, the founders of multiple nonprofit organizations such as Moms Demand Action. Oh gosh, what was the other one? Brady and oh gosh, Mark Kelly's wife.
Oh yeah. The name, okay, yeah.
Gabby Giffords, yes, Gabby Giffords, yes. And I think the nonprofit is called Giffords, and I sent a copy to them as well. I haven't gotten any responses from them, but I did get a response from a senator, and he wrote a review on the back of the book, so I was really thrilled about that. Let me see, do I have it over here? Yeah, there's a very generous him from. I actually got to meet him at the City of Fairfax library. They had an event with Moms Demand Action, and he was giving a discussion about all the laws that he passed to help prevent gun violence in general, not just school gun violence. And so I thought he might be interested. Senator Saddam Aslan Salim, and he's very very receptive guy, and he seems very passionate about making a difference. So I really appreciated that. And the fact that he was willing to write a review, which is awesome. So I was really thrilled about that. I'm trying to think, who else did I send it to? I think I sent it to a few reporters that I knew that did some research and put some infographics on major newspapers, but I never heard back from them either. So I'm gonna keep pushing. I'm gonna use the fact that I am a librarian, and I'm going to contact libraries all around the country and do virtual tours. That is going to be a very time-consuming effort I'll be doing on every weekend that I'm off. But right now I'm also, as I mentioned before, I'm currently doing the audiobook for A Safe Place, and I just finished the paperback version of my next book, which is called The Ultimate U.S. School Shooting Reference Guide. There's three volumes. Basically, it's just all the data that I use to make this book possible.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
Good. Well,
just proving.
you can hold that up for a moment if you want,
Oh,
because I
sure.
think it's
Yeah.
this has been the book itself is really the focus of our discussion today and the data that you've collected and put in that book. So I think it's worth showing that, and it's certainly something that needs to be addressed even more so than it has been so far. And I think the way we started was, I mean, we both are very distant from or not familiar with these kinds of events happening, certainly on military posts. And how, why, I did like that the question of, well, why is that? What, and it's too bad that there's no more openness about why is that and what the real reason for that.
Well, I think if from both of our experiences, I think we can both say credibly that it is because there's more accountability. Because in the civilian world, kid acts up, and let's say they're punished, a parent can go cause all kinds of trouble. Why are you punishing my kid and stuff? And that happens all the time. My mother is a substitute teacher in Florida, and she tells me all kinds of horror stories, and I'm so grateful I'm not a teacher. I have so much respect for people that want to do that as a profession and continue to do so and do it well, and still do it with the same passion and gusto after being just the way that kids are allowed to abuse teachers, because that would never happen on a military base.
Not bad. Not, I have no idea what it's like now because it's been a long time. I mean, I went to schools on military posts back in the 60s and through 71. I
Okay.
know what it was like then. I have no idea what it's like now, but
Right.
I do think that, maybe there still is a little bit of a difference, but as far as the level of discipline and accountability on the military reservation versus in the civilian world,
Right.
just because there
And th and
may.
that is my illusion as well. That may or may not be true, but I imagine they keep their to their core missions and they keep to their traditions. And it just makes the military base run better when there's not a whole bunch of
Well,
unnecessary drama.
I will give you a hilarious example. I mean, I was a high school junior at this point, and I was at Fort Knox High School, and we got all these 16-year-old, kids, and by then, some 16-year-olds are pretty good-sized people, right? I mean, at that point, we had this was junior English, and the woman's name, we nicknamed her the Red Baron. I couldn't figure out why I was in this class with these other guys that were really the top of the junior class. How they threw me in with this group. And anyway, one day we had an in-class assignment and she was not happy. And then she gave us another assignment to do right there, right then. And I recall one of my classmates literally, and some people will remember this, some won't. He got up to sharpen his pencil. He took about two steps and she said to him, and I still remember this so clearly, she said, "Get off of my floor," and l scared the living crap out of all of these 16-year-old kids that, by then shouldn't be so afraid of a teacher. But she ruled that room. And you know what? There was no kid that was going to defy that teacher. She was, basically, she was all the authority right there.
And they have to be. They have to be. I actually taught English in China for a year, and one thing I learned from my colleagues who are much better teachers than I was that they didn't smile. They're like on the very first day, you had to set the tone on the very first day because otherwise your entire year was going to be miserable.
Really,
And
wow.
yeah, they would just they would just not smile. Like they would set the rules, like everybody needs to take their seats, everybody would stay quiet. And like if any kid was acting up, they would take a ruler and they would slap it to their own desk, like because it made like a really loud
Strange.
noise. And they were like, okay, there's no messing around with this teacher. But with me, I'm like, hey guys, how you doing? I was like, I'm trying to be all positive and happy and stuff. Oh man, these elementary school kids are just running
Oh.
all over me. It was terrible. But my mom, same strategy. She sets a serious tone in the beginning. It's like, listen, you have some assignments, let's do it. There's no horsing around. Get off your phones.
Wow. Well, anyway, that's it's an interesting, interesting insight into all of these, and I'm really glad you were able to make this podcast and give us some further deeper insight into school shootings and what you found. And I'm hoping that you have an opportunity to talk about this in more places. Certainly an important topic. And unfortunately, I would say that we will most likely need to keep addressing this and try to push forward with some solutions. But I do think that the data, the work you've done to collect the data, to try and straighten people out about the information you're finding, as opposed to as what you mentioned about the police officer simply without any factual background making a comment, that's more dangerous in a lot of ways, and it would put him in a bad spot if he's confronted with a situation like that, if that's what the way he's thinking. So I think it's helpful and vital that you share the information, and we're very glad you're willing to do that.
Thank you so much. If I may, I wanted to address one more thing that you said.
Sure.
What not just technology that can help prevent school shootings. And we're talking about emotional mastery. I don't think parents realize that they already are teaching their children about emotional mastery, whether they realize it or not. Because if we've learned anything, that kids, you can tell kids over and over and over and over and over and over again. They're just not going to adapt it, but they watch what you do. And so depending on what kind of situation that you're in, the bills are not getting paid, you're having an argument with your spouse, you just got laid off, somebody cut you off in traffic. The way you respond in that moment, that is teaching them more than any words will ever tell you, any class you can go into. So I think that's one thing. If parents can take away one thing, Being mindful of how you're reacting to negative stimulus, because that is what your kid is absorbing as far as how they should act in the real world. So
Yeah.
that's the only thing I
No,
would like to leave with.
yeah, you're the example as the parent, right?
Exactly,
Yeah.
exactly.
So
Yeah.
that really is important. Yeah. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Hope, Timothy.
Thank you so
Appreciate
much.
you having me.
Thank
What a
you.
beautiful topic. What a beautiful explanation. Thank you, Tim, for your thoughtful questions. Y'all are watching Tim's Travails. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, proud producer of the show on Incandescent Radio and Incandescent TV. And you can also check out the podcast on Spotify, iHeart, and Apple Podcasts. So, Lewis, we are going to do everything we can to help you spread the word about this really important book. As Tim said, we need people to, be aware, so that they can change their behavior and help our little guys make sure that they don't grow up and have this Travis.
Yes. Thank you so much. Yes, thank you so much. I
Awesome.
greatly appreciate it. I'm honored to be here.
Well,
Thank
thank
you.
you. You're all listening to Lewis Aponte talk about a safe place, the real story behind school safety, and how to prevent the next school shooting on Tim's Travails. We'll see you all next month. Thank you. Have a great day.
Take care. Bye-bye.